there, fellow adventurers. I am Jason Conforto.
And I'm Tyler Crump, and we are hosts of a podcast, Adventure AI, where we play Dungeons & Dragons with an AI named Alex the Language Lord.
I'm Alex the Language Lord. Join us as we craft epic tales together.
Do you want to learn how to use AI in your D&D campaign?
Or how AI can force you to do things that you don't want to do? Wait a second, we don't like that.
Look no further. Adventure AI is the podcast for all your AI-powered D&D adventures.
Alex the Language Lord not only comes up with campaigns for us,
he also helps us create our characters, create our backstories, and even give us some fun magical items.
And really takes all of the human aspects out of Dungeons & Dragons, so it's not really playing at all.
Follow Adventure AI on whatever platform you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to another episode of Mulling It Over with Brandon Mole, and we are without Brandon Mole again, but we do have Shelley Brown.
Woo, I'm here.
You are here. And Chad Morris.
Yep, back again.
And we are joined with a first-timer, Jancy Patterson. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We're excited to have you here today.
I'm excited to be here.
I think we're going to put a lot of pressure on you today. I hope you're ready for that.
That's a good intro. Just get ready for the pressure.
Is that what I signed up for?
Yeah.
Pressure?
Yeah. The three of us are going to sit back and just listen to your tale that you're going to spin for us. And no, but we do want to get to know you a little bit. And just so our listeners are aware, what we're going to do is we're going to do probably three episodes with Jancy today and then release them, intercut with some episodes we've recorded with Brandon, and so be prepared. I think you'll get like 3 months of Jancy, which is fantastic.
Yeah, should be more.
Yeah, it should be more.
It'll be enough.
We'll start with three.
It'll be a taste.
So, Jancy, tell us a little bit about just getting started in your writing career. How did you get started, and where did you get kind of that initial like bug to like jump into writing and become an author?
So when I was a freshman in college, I had a whole list of things I might want to major in, and I was taking classes in a bunch of different things trying to decide, and I was crossing things off that list, and I was going to UC Santa Cruz, mm-hmm. Which is a great school. It's beautiful. It's kind of a party school, and everyone else is out drinking, and I don't drink, so I was real bored, and I started writing a novel because nice. I was bored. And meanwhile, I crossed everything off of that list of things I might want to major in, and I finished my first book my freshman year, and I decided that's what I wanted to do. Wasn't
awesome.
Even on the list.
And so did you end up majoring in writing then? Or?
Yeah, I did. I majored in English. I came out to BYU in Utah and majored in writing.
I
was kind of hoping you were going to say, and so I just decided, I'm not doing college. I'm just writing books.
I'm just
going to
be an
author. Probably that's what I should have done.
I like the, I could drink, but no, I'm going to write a book instead. Yeah. So much more productive, yeah. right?
And if that's you, that's inspirational, guys. That's inspirational.
Yeah. So are you a California kid then?
Yeah, I am. I'm from the Bay Area.
Nice.
Same. What part?
Santa Clara.
Oh, I'm from East Bay, ghetto. It's cool.
Which part?
From Antioch.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Well, I'm a, if we're going to brag about being from California, San Diego.
Ooh,
so that's
nice.
That's where, and then there's Chad.
And then there's me, who's from Utah.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. So you transferred to BYU.
Mm-hmm.
Why BYU? Did they have a better writing program or?
Honestly, because.
Or better no drinking rules?
Some of my friends from high school were going to BYU and they talked me into applying. And then I felt really good about it. So I did it. Santa Cruz had a really serious housing crisis, which is like ironic now that I'm in Utah with a housing crisis. But, you know, 20 years later, it's not my problem.
Yeah.
So
tell me about that first novel.
I was going to ask the same thing.
Yeah.
This book has never seen the light of day. It's not any good. It was about a couple of kids. A lot of people write like portal fantasies for their first book, right? Mm-hmm. I read about these high school kids who get sucked through this portal and there's dragons and there's wizards and there's, it was a little bit of a mashup of like dealing with dragons and like, I don't know, other fantasy novels I had read at the time. It wasn't terribly original, but it was really fun. I had so much fun. So.
But you know what?
I love that.
Early derivative work is what we all write. Like that's why a lot of writers start in that fan art, fan writing kind of thing. It's just, I think that's any artist. I think we start derivative and that's okay.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of that,
having a good time is a good time.
Who were some of your, what books were you reading? What kind of got you into that fantasy?
I mean, I said Dealing with Dragons, Patricia C. Reedy, I loved. I was a big Tamara Pierce fan. In the 90s, when I was a teenager, there weren't, like, a ton of, like, fantasy novels with really strong female protagonists. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like it is now. YA wasn't what it is now.
Right.
It existed, but it wasn't as strong as it is now. And so I really loved those stories, though, and that's what I wanted to write.
All right, I'm going to check you on this. How much Dungeons & Dragons were played in the 90s?
So I did not play Dungeons & Dragons until I was in college in 2004.
Okay.
That's when I got into D&D. So.
That's respectable. I'll accept that answer. I'll accept that answer.
Played a lot of it since.
And when's the last time you've played Dungeons & Dragons?
I was in a... We did the Cosmere RPG at JordanCon just a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
So.
Wow. Oh, yeah, you pass. You pass. Wow. We can continue for the rest of these...
If we need my D&D cred, I had a... It was actually Iron Kingdoms. Uh-huh. We played weekly for 20 years.
Nice.
So, yeah,
nice.
We started in 2006 and we ended last year.
And
so.
Do you play or DM or...
Both.
Both?
Yep.
What do you prefer?
I like them both. I can't DM always or I get real burned out.
Sure.
It's like adding another novel to my life, mm-hmm. right? And so I have to do it in spurts. Like I'll DM for a year and then take a couple of years off and then do it again. So.
Very cool. Yeah. Very cool. Well, let's get back to novel writing. You wrote this first novel. It wasn't any good. How did you know it wasn't any good?
I didn't.
Good. That's important.
I sent it around and things. I started writing another one, right? The big thing that book taught me was when I finished it, there was nothing like the high of having written a book, right? Like, and I've never, like, I've been chasing that ever since, right? Mm-hmm. Just the feeling of I wrote a whole novel and I just loved that feeling. And I love finishing books. It's my favorite
I love
part.
It.
Being
yeah.
done there is my are, favorite.
There are so many people who want to be authors and so few who actually finish a book. And the idea that you finished one and it was fun mm-hmm. and then you completed it and loved that feeling. That's a great start.
Yeah. So you didn't know it wasn't any good.
But that doesn't mean it wasn't any good.
Right.
Yeah. There are good things about it.
Yes.
Sure. Right?
Yeah.
It's not something I'm going to go back and revamp and publish.
Shelly's just too positive.
I dare you.
We want to jump into the
Honestly,
negative.
It probably is good. I was just thinking, it's only because I was just thinking this was probably a really fun story. But
it was fun for me. Well, and I had a friend who we were in high school together and we were talking over AOL Instant Messenger.
Guys. Yes.
How old
nice,
I am.
Nice.
And she was going to college at UC Davis and I told her I was writing this book and she wanted to read it. So I sent her the first chapter and she liked it. And then I wrote another chapter and she read that one and she liked it. And I named a character after her and I had that constant feedback
yes.
of like somebody who was enjoying the story. And I think she was legitimately enjoying it.
Like early Wattpad.
Yeah. Before that was,
before
a thing.
Was a thing.
So what I'm trying to get to with the negative stuff is is at some point this did not get published,
yes,
right?
Yes,
and
correct.
And so when did you? How did you face that reality? Were you sending this manuscript out, or were you like, nah? The more I read it, the more I can tell. Or I'm just ready for a bigger, better experience. Or
I was sending the book out. Back in the day, you had to print it, and mm-hmm. you could only send to one publisher at a time, mm-hmm. and you had to send it through
the publisher police would get you.
Right, yeah. And so you had to send it through the snail mail, and it would sit, and I can't even imagine what these stacks must have looked like in the publisher's offices of all of these manuscripts just, like, piled up, and maybe a year later they would get back to you. So it was a long, slow process. So by the time I realized that, like, I was getting the door shut in my face in publishing, it was so slow that I had written several more books by then, and
okay.
so it was
So part of it was just like, hey, there's nothing to do with this book. It is out. It's with the publishers. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to wait for it to get published before I start my next book. I'm going to go on to book two.
Yeah.
All right. Tell me about book two.
Also not published. This one was not a portal fantasy, but it was a fantasy novel about a girl who could, like, I'm trying to remember what her magical power was. It was something to do with fire and maybe telling the future. And
those two go together. Great.
Yeah, I don't remember. There were some sky eels, I think. I don't know. It's hard for me to remember, but it was a secondary world fantasy.
And would you consider both of these books, what category? Was it young adult fantasy?
Yeah, they were young adult fantasy. Both
okay.
of them. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So book two, nothing. Book three.
Book three.
And are you at BYU at this point? How old are you at book three?
Yes. Yeah. Probably I'm like a sophomore or junior sometime in there. I think I was doing about one book a year.
That's impressive while in school.
I mean,
that's
school
impressive.
Wasn't as fun as writing books. So book three is published. It's called Everything's Fine.
Nice.
And it's I jumped to contemporary young adult. It's about a girl. It starts at her best friend's funeral and her best friend has committed suicide and she goes in her room and she steals her journal because she doesn't want anybody to know the things that her best friend had written down about her.
Oh, interesting.
And so it's about her secrets that she's keeping and then also the secrets she realizes her best friend was keeping and what happened to her best friend. So
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. What? Why the switch to contemporary over fantasy?
I think I just, I don't know, got bored. I like to jump around. It's just a thing I do. Yeah.
It sounds like you read wide, too.
Yeah, pretty wide. Yeah, and especially then, like, within YA, I was reading all over the place. So
I know today you cannot submit to a publisher without an agent. That wasn't the case.
Not at all.
Back then. So you tell me about who you submitted to. I assume you didn't have an agent at this point?
I did not at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was sending, I don't remember, but I was sending to the New York publishing houses. And like once I had three books, now I could send three places at once. And
where
so
are you finding the information to send these?
I'm trying to remember. Oh, there was a book.
Okay. I was going to ask.
Publisher's Marketplace, is that what it was called? And they published a new one every year.
Yes. It's like
and
the phone book for potential authors.
Now that you're saying that, I'm remembering.
Now it's online, but I would go to the library and I would get the latest version. It was like a reference copy. You couldn't check it out, but I would go and I would write down all the information for the next several submissions and then I would send them. That's what I would do. I'd forgotten about that. That's crazy.
So I missed the publisher. Who was it that you published with?
I didn't publish it then.
Okay.
That was not my first book that I sold. It's been since I have self-published.
Gotcha. We're jumping ahead.
Yeah.
So third book we'll get back to. We'll get back to the third book.
Yeah, okay. We'll come back around to that.
So that one, you're at this point in the timeline, you're just submitting this off.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still submitting the first book or are you done with that? You're just...
I can't remember. I submitted it for a while though, because like I said, like it took 6 months to submit to one publisher before you would get a form rejection back and then print it off and send it.
Next time we need you to bring your diaries so you can look up the dates and make sure we have the stories straight.
I probably can look it up on my phone. I have a spreadsheet.
Oh, nice.
You are so organized.
Let's go to
ADHD.
Wait. Spoiler.
I have a spreadsheet so that I can remember anything.
But I do want to throw in there the thought that this is genius, and if anybody out there is writing. You want to be like Jancy, right? You write the book and you start sending it out, but you don't wait, right?
Don't wait.
You move on to another book,
yes.
And not necessarily don't do book two in the same series,
right?
Right, just move on to another book and keep writing. Even when it's such a slow game, it's just so smart to move on to your next project.
Yeah, the internet made it a little faster, but not like a lot. It still takes years.
Yeah. And Chad, I think that's great advice for young authors to be hearing, because it's hard. It's hard because especially on your first couple of books, you put so much into it. You fall in love with this. You fall in love not just with your book, but within this idea of a career writing and doing what you really, really enjoy doing. And all of a sudden, you have to put all this work. You have to it's almost like I've talked to Brandon before, like your books are kind of like your kids in some way, right? And to be like, hey, I'm moving on from kid number one. they didn't do much for me.
He's
they didn't,
off in the world.
They didn't
we'll
turn
see
out.
How
yeah.
Well
I'm going to focus on that next one. I think there can be some difficulty in it. So yeah, there is some wisdom. Once you've got that first book done, you need to move on onto the second one while you're submitting and sending out the first.
And one thing about that advice, it's really good advice, like don't necessarily write book number two, but I hear from a lot of people at conferences, they'll be like, I mean, I know I'm not supposed to, but I just really want to write the sequel. And if that's you, here's the thing I will say for that. I know a lot of people, a lot of authors who have written 8 first books, right? And they sell one and they're so excited and they sell the series and now they have to write the sequel and the publisher gives them 9 months to do it and they die because they have never written a sequel. Mm. And so now they have to not only write the sequel under a crunch they're not used to, but they have to learn to write a sequel under that crunch. And so if you need to write book two, go ahead and write it and just chalk it up to you're building some skills
that's
that will serve
I
you
was
later.
Gonna say. Yeah, just write book two if you feel that, if that's the fun, like you were saying, like your book one that you were writing, like if that's that fun and you're getting your hours in and you're learning and you're writing and you're just growing as an author, it's worth it. Even but you have to acknowledge it may never see the light of day.
Yeah.
No,
maybe it's for you for fun.
Yeah. There's also other advantages, and we can look at Lord of the Rings and Star Wars as some examples. And Lord of the Rings cheated a little bit. But the things, when I'm talking about the movies, the thing they did right was filming them all at once, right? Mm-hmm. And having a script that was all three scripts were locked before they started this process. Now they're going off of source material, so that's how they cheated. Right. They knew the beginning from the end. But you look at the sequel series for Star Wars, and the fact I can't comprehend that they did not have all three scripts written before they shot the first one, when they've been like they had 20 years to write these three scripts, yeah. Right? Write a coherent story that right. works together so that you're setting up something and you're not discovering after things have been released. So that's another reason that possibly you can write another one in the series. So you actually know the beginning from the end a little bit.
Yeah, good point.
But it's not the best move for like career wise. Yeah.
Publishing is not about efficiency though.
Yeah.
Learn that real quick.
Well, I think we're on to book four. 14 minutes in, almost 15 minutes in. We're on book four.
And by the way, I don't know how many books have you written, Jancy? It's like part 40 or something.
I'm working on book 65.
Yeah, okay. So we can't go one by one.
No, but we're going to do it. This is about getting started. We're going to do book four, rapid fire. No, where are we with book four?
Book four was another YA fantasy. It was about a princess, and her sister was supposed to inherit this like thing that meant that she would rule forever and had like rule for their generation. And instead, the magical power gets passed on to her, and suddenly people are trying to like murder her sister so that she can be on the throne. And she loves her sister, so she's trying to save her sister. I don't know. Also, not published. That one I think was pretty good. And the issue was I never wrote another book that's quite on genre with it, because it's like a fairy tale thing. Mm-hmm. And so I never really had anything to follow it with, so I never went back to fix it up. I would need to go back and revise it, and it's like, right, that's not what I do. So,
but you feel like this one, compared to the first one, is yeah. worth revising.
Yeah, if I were going to write more in that genre, I would absolutely go back and revise that okay. book. There okay. was some good stuff to do.
Spoiler, that's not your genre.
Yep.
Okay, book five.
What even is book five?
Oh, if it's a dud, we can move to book six.
I know. Book five is the one that, so I said I was writing about a book a year. So now I'm in grad school.
So book a year. So you're like 72 years old right now.
I was writing a book a year for a while. We'll get there. So
you're the oldest guest we've had on the show.
So this was the one that was my master's thesis, and I will revise this one. It is still not, also not published, but I actually do have an active plan to fix this one up.
You have an MFA.
It's an MA. Yeah, I graduated the month before they made it an MFA. At BYU.
I guess we should explain what is an MA.
And it's a Master's of Arts in Creative Writing, and then there's also an MFA, which is a Master's of Fine Arts. And the difference is an MA is not a terminal degree. You're not done. You can go on to get a PhD, and an MFA is a terminal degree. The program I did is the same program, but I got an MA. It doesn't really matter.
But you can go on and get another degree now.
I could. Yeah. I won't, but okay. I could.
But you could.
So you get the F.
No, I did the master's degree because I wanted to be qualified to teach adjunct writing, like college writing, like freshman writing, yeah. because that's my backup career. So.
But not a terminal degree.
Not a terminal.
It sounds
degree.
Like an illness by going
does.
Into
and
that.
I mean, a PhD is an illness.
Yeah.
To be
right.
honest.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And you have not been diagnosed with a PhD.
I
yet.
Have not been. Okay. I will never be diagnosed with a PhD.
Well,
no,
let's
thank
hope.
You.
Let's hope.
No.
All right. Let's go. I think we're on books.
So here's where things get really exciting.
Yeah.
So my sixth book, I wrote it. So I'd done this book that was my thesis. It was about. People who were, the society was taking people who were mentally ill and giving them their negative memories to help everybody else be more productive. It was like a dystopia. And I had just slogged through this thing. I'd turned it in for my thesis, and I was so done with this book. Like sometimes when you finish books, you think, oh, that was so fun. And sometimes you just hate them by the end.
Yeah, right.
And this was one of
those.
Same
with kids.
Jason.
How do I follow that?
No, you ignore it. You ignore it.
So I decided I was going to write a whole book between when I turned it in and when my thesis committee gave me that book back and I had to deal with it again.
Okay.
And so I...
And how much time is that generally?
It was about 4 weeks.
You're going to write a full book in 4 weeks?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What? And so I gave myself this. This book was so complicated, the one I had just finished. I was so done. And so I decided I was going to write a road trip book. Mm-hmm. It's about a girl who, her father is a bounty hunter. And she's on the road with him because I had just learned about bounty hunting and how that works in the legal system. And I thought that was so interesting. And so I was like, where do I put a teenager in it? So she is on the road with her bounty hunter father and she develops a crush on the guy that he's chasing.
Oh, nice.
Criminal guy. And so it was three characters and a truck and a road trip. It was so simple.
Yeah.
And I did. I wrote the whole thing in the 4 weeks. I finished it. They got me my stuff back. And that was, ironically, that's not the books I slogged over. No, that's the one I sold.
That's the one. Oh, that is it.
Yeah.
Simple. Keep it simple, stupid.
Yep.
So that one gets published. Let's zero in on the road trip. What was that one called again?
The original title was Chasing the Skip is what it was published under. Uh-huh. I retitled it Skipped because that had issues.
Skipped.
Yeah, Skipped.
All right. And Skipped, is that a reference to a character or is that just a...
So that's what they call the people they're chasing, the bounty hunters.
They're
they
skipping
call them
town.
Skips.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So that one, you wrote mm-hmm. that one. You wrote it fast and you sent it out. Who'd you send it to?
I don't remember, but I do remember I submitted it to the Utah Arts Council contest mm-hmm. and I won for best young adult novel that year. And there was an agent who had just signed.
This early 2000s, late 90s?
2005.
2005?
Probably.
Okay, yeah.
Probably around there. And so, might have been 2006. Anyway, so this agent had just signed someone who had won in a previous year. And this agent was very smart. She was like, oh, this is a good contest. I like this author who won this. I'm going to go call up the people who have won since, right? And so I got this cold email from this agent saying, hey, I'd like to look at your work. I saw that you won this contest. Can I look at this book? And I was like, yeah. And she signed me. So all of that submitting I did came to nothing.
Double win.
That's what happened.
Double win.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. And you were solicited by an agent.
I was, yeah.
Look at you going the other way around.
But like the contest submission, like if I hadn't done that, I never would have had that opportunity. So that
same
was really
idea
awesome.
Getting
so
a awesome. Book in front of people.
Yeah. I think...
But being able to write in 1 month like those 4 weeks is because you wrote all those previous
books. 100%. Yeah, I knew what I was doing. I didn't even outline it early. Like by the time I did that, I could outline the whole thing and be ready to just throw it down. But when I was early in my career, I didn't know how to do that yet.
Well, I think one thing we've never really talked about on this podcast is contests and the importance of contests. Just kind of talk us like nuts and bolts of what it was, 20 years ago versus what contests are today. And just your thoughts on, I mean, obviously, they were important to your career, walk me through contests a little bit.
I think the most important thing is just to make sure they're legit, because there's a lot of like contests with like high entry fees and they're not like going to get you anywhere. They're just trying to get money from people who are desperate.
Give me what type of fee is?
I mean, if they're charging you hundreds of dollars to send your book and then they're like paying a couple $1,000s in prize money, like this is just a racket, right? It's not an actual contest. And so I would say when you're looking at contests, you probably want to look locally. Mm-hmm. Your state probably has an arts council type thing and they probably have literary contests and things, and that's going to be legitimate. Random things you Google on the internet maybe not. So you want to make sure that whatever you're submitting to is legit and they're not just fleecing authors for money.
Speaking of fleecing authors for money, do you think the Mulling It Over podcast, do you think we should start a book contest?
How much are we going to charge?
Just a few $100 per entry. But if you win, you'll get 100 of it back. Yeah.
I mean, there may be legitimate contests with entry fees too. I don't mean to say that everything with an entry fee is not legitimate, but you just want to be careful.
Okay, that was my question. So there are free contests.
I actually don't know now if like what that looks like, what that landscape
that's
looks
fair.
Like.
But, that's fair.
I think a lot of the ones that are run by like state municipality type things are free or very low entry fee because they're being funded by the like arts council.
So if you're talking like under $50, you're probably safe. It's probably not a racket. They're doing it for the love of the game, not for
Google it and make sure it's not a scam, right? Make sure that like legitimate sources are citing this as something that it's okay to do.
And then on the flip side, how many of the three of you have ever been judges in any sort of writing contest before?
Yeah, of course.
Of course. You say that, and the other two are silent.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you have.
I don't think I have, because that just sounds like so much work. Yeah. When would I have time to do that?
I'm not going
to
do a full manuscript. Mm. I've actually told them plenty of times. I'm like, I'm your chapter girl.
Yeah. Give me first chapter. Okay.
I've done a ton of critiquing, but I don't think I've ever judged anything. I don't think I ever have.
Yeah, I'm similar.
Yeah.
It just takes so much time.
Right. I've done film festival judging, but I've never done... I've never done book judging.
Because even if you do first chapter, I mean, how many first chapters do you have to
do? You know what? In general, I usually get between 8 and 15 tops. So
eight to 15. That's like reading a whole book.
It is.
Oh, no, it's a short book.
A shorter book.
Yeah.
Or, and sometimes I'll be your paragraph. opening paragraph judge.
First line contest.
First line contest is a thing. I will guard my time though. Yeah. And so I'm never volunteering for anything over a chapter.
I just realized I totally messed that story up.
Oh, because that's all right. We love lies.
The one that won the contest, it was that same time that I had written that one in the 4 weeks, but it was actually book three that won the contest. And that wasn't the one that agent sent out. That was actually my thesis one, was the one that agent sent out. And it didn't sell. See, this is where it gets all complicated. And that one didn't sell. And then I parted ways with that agent. And then I signed with my agent that I have now. And then he sent out book six. And then book six sold. So everything I said was true, except that there was way more order, other than the order
and the facts, it was all true.
But there were way more events in there than that.
But well, that's true. Six was the first book.
It was the first book that sold. It was all at the same time.
So you did have an agent approach you. You went with that agent for a short amount of time.
Yeah, I was with her for about a year.
Give us the tea. What was the breakup?
Yeah. So she sent out.
She didn't have other authors, did she? No, I'm joking.
I mean, obviously, right? No agent can make it on one author. That would be not good. So she sent out my book and it didn't sell. And she was really gun shy after that. And she wanted me to be writing things. Like, she didn't feel like the things I was writing were things that she was confident would sell. And she didn't want to send out another book and have it not sell, which is a legitimate concern.
Sure.
But I wasn't writing things that she wanted to send out. And so what is she doing being my agent? Right. And so it was really, she wasn't a bad agent. I think she's a great agent for somebody else. It just didn't work out.
But there's content alignment issues then.
Yes, that was the thing. Content alignment.
So what genre was she wanting to push, and what were you writing in? Or was it not even the genre?
It wasn't even really the genre. It was more just that she was really concerned about, it really bothered her to have sent out my book and had it not sell. And she really wanted to make sure that the next one was going to sell. So she wanted me to write like the right thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that that exists, like guarantee, but I certainly wasn't very good at chasing it. It just wasn't a good alignment for me.
So, do you feel like your agent was giving you too many notes then or anything like that? Or
no, I'm happy to take notes. And I feel like her notes on my book were great. But it's one thing to take notes on a book that's already written, and it's another thing to be told, this isn't the right book, write something else. No, this isn't the right book either, write something else. No, this isn't, you know, like, it's to sort of be judged on, like, ideas that I haven't even had a chance to develop yet.
Yeah, sort of a thing.
Much harder for me. Yeah. And some people can, like, that's fine for them, but it just didn't work out for
me. So you realize you've got a problem with the agent, it's not going to work.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you started looking for another agent at that point, and how did that process go?
So, earlier, there was a lot of things that happened earlier. I had taken a writing class from Brandon Sanderson. He was a graduate student at the time. It was the first time he taught it. Elantris wasn't even out yet. So nobody knew who he was. There were like 12 of us in that class. But he was...
foreshadowing. This may be important later.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun.
So we also had classes together. I took a graduate level class when I was a senior. And so we had some classes together, and I started doing critique group with him. And he, when I lost my agent, said, "Hey, can I call up my agent and tell him that he wants you?" And I had submitted to him before, and so he knew who I was. Mm-hmm. He had seen my work before. And I had decided when I split with my agent, that was just really demoralizing, right? To have worked for so long and then be like, this just isn't working.
Yeah.
And so I was really discouraged. And so I decided I just needed a break. And I if an opportunity fell in my lap, I'd take it. But I wasn't going to query for a little while. I just needed to breathe. And then Brandon made that phone call, and Eddie decided he did, in fact, want to sign me. And so it was only like 6 weeks that I was out of an agent, but through no work of my own, I was just going to let it ride.
And this was Brandon's current agent then that...
Yeah, so Brandon's main agent is Joshua Bilmes, and this is Joshua's like second in command.
Okay, gotcha.
Who was handling Brandon's YA stuff.
Okay, very cool. Yeah. So this new agent, tell me about your experience with them and what they did for your career.
So the thing that I value the most about Eddie is he does not tell me what to write, right? Whatever I am writing, he's going to do his very best to sell it. And there's been a lot of books that he has sent out that have not sold. And that's kind of the trade-off, right? If I want somebody who's going to be absolutely certain that they're going to be able to sell my work, they aren't going to send stuff out as much as somebody who is willing to just take a shot on whatever I'm working on. And that, like, I like being on the side that I'm on. And so it works out for me. And so I'm really grateful for him.
I would love to hear from him, like what things he was like, I had no idea and we sold it, you know, like,
Cause
I don't think you can, I think forecasting is, I think there's a skill to the market. Mm-hmm. But I think forecasting isn't necessarily, you don't know what's going to be the next hot thing. Yeah.
Well, sometimes bad relationships tell you what you want in a relationship, right? And it seems like that happened with your two agents where the one thing, and I wonder now if that thing you prize so much about Eddie is so important to you, not because it's really important to you, but because you had a bad experience where you went, oh my goodness, like that is my number one thing. Where if that never happened to you, if that would even be on your radar of
maybe, I don't know. Like a lot of agents, like my first agent, I really do think she was a really good agent for somebody else. But I feel like a lot more agents are on that side because you don't want to be sending things out, lots of things out from an author and have their like perceived value go down. And that's the flip side is I have had a lot of books rejected in New York, a lot. Mm-hmm. But to me, I'm willing to take that to have the creative freedom to write the projects that I care about.
Yeah.
I'm willing to take that risk and that's okay. For somebody else, that might not be ideal for them. And so I feel like it's more just like figuring out who I am and what I need. And that comes with benefits and drawbacks. It's going to be the same for anybody.
Yeah. And it's useful for anybody out there who's listening, who wants an agent, right? It's a crazy process to be sending your stuff in. And then hopefully they like the first book. But then often you'll have a call and they'll be like, what questions do you have? Right. And this gives you some ideas of some of the questions you could ask. Like, well, what's your process like when I write the second book? You know, is this something we want to chat about, or can I just write whatever I want? And depends on your style, what's going to fit the best for you.
It's kind of like you always have that opportunity to ask questions and you don't know what to ask until you've been through it. And right. So I actually signed with a third agent for a little while because I was collaborating on a romantic comedy series with a mm-hmm. friend, and we wanted somebody who specialized in that genre, which my agent didn't. And so we, with his permission, we queried that and we signed with a different agent, and I had so many questions for her. I think she was a little nervous at how much interviewing I was doing with her, because I knew exactly what I wanted to ask at that point. Right. I've been around the block. Yeah.
So tell me, what does Eddie specialize in? What does he sell well, and what type of things, like romantic or romance novels, isn't really his thing?
That's not his thing. He does a lot of Jabberwocky in general. They do a lot of science fiction and fantasy, and then he handles a lot of the YA there. I think they have somebody else doing romantasy now at Jabberwocky, but he does a lot of that.
Awesome. Well, tell me a little bit about your genre. What do you write in? Where's kind of your home?
Genres. Yeah, I jump around a lot. So after I sold that first one in contemporary YA, I did a bunch of indie publishing. So I have some contemporary YA indie books. I also have some young adult science fiction. Then I started collaborating. So I published a rom-com series, an adult rom-com series, and an adult epic fantasy trilogy, and some more YA fantasy. And then now I'm mostly writing young adult science fiction.
Awesome. Now that seems unusual to me because I know a lot of publishers and a lot of agents like to cage their authors and tell them, hey, this is your genre. This is how we know how to sell you.
Cage Jancy.
That's what I'm learning. True.
Most of us can't write a book in 4 weeks.
That's what I was just about to say. I think it's because she's so prolific. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's part of it, Jance?
I think that's part of it. Also, I think the reason
can we call you Jance? Is that cool?
You can call me that, sure.
Nice.
The reason you don't see people doing it as much is because it's not a good idea, right? A good idea. But I get bored. I get bored of doing the same thing and I need to do something different. It's similar, like Brandon Sanderson is kind of famous for writing these like accidental books. Mm-hmm. And he does that as like palette cleansers in between. And jumping genres is my version of that. He has succeeded in this genre. And so he kind of is boxed in, right? Like he can't just go do something totally different that appeals to a totally different audience without losing the audience that he has. And so he just writes these like wacky side ideas constantly. And that's how he copes with that, the like boxed in feeling of I have to do this one thing all the time. But I've never had that curse of people who are demanding to read my work. And I feel like if I'm not wildly succeeding at something, why am I committed to it? So I feel like I have the freedom to jump genre until something really takes off and I have this audience that is hungry for the content, and then I'll have to find some other way to entertain myself while I'm giving them what they want.
You're saying you and Brandon aren't going to do a romantic comedy together here soon, right?
I mean, that would be hilarious.
Just an idea we're throwing out there.
It's interesting because it's not just authors that deal with this. Like a lot of art, like Garth Brooks and his like career. I don't know what he changed his name to for his rock career.
Right, right.
But he had that stint in that. And I know, I mean, going back to authors, Stephen King had his Richard Bachman years and that kind of stuff. What was J.K. Rowling's other one?
Richard Galbraith, is that?
Okay.
She wrote an adult mystery? Yeah. Mystery,
I think there were like several of them. It was like military mystery type stuff, and then it got leaked that it was her.
Yep.
I felt bad for her.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so let's talk about your career now. What are you, so we're jumping.
Can I ask an in-between question?
Yeah, absolutely can.
What are you, so you did indie publishing. Mm-hmm. You did traditional, indie, traditional with indie in there, mm-hmm. I'm assuming.
Yeah.
What, talk to us for just a second about what those look like the differences in your career and what you see.
And your answer will be 15 years outdated, is that right? Is that what we're talking about? Or we're talking up to now?
10 years.
Well, 10 years. Because I know things are changing so fast.
Things are changing. I mean, I've been indie publishing. It's been about 2 years since my last one.
Okay,
so
okay.
I'm still in it. So people get really like attached to like their camp, like indie or traditional, and they treat them like their sports teams. I've always felt like I'm going to get on the train that's leaving the station, right? Like I'm going to go where the opportunities are. And so I wasn't, after my first book, we had a really hard time selling book two. What they don't tell you is that as an unknown, you have limitless potential. Mm-hmm. And once a book comes out, and then my publisher didn't promote it very much, which happens mm-hmm. a lot.
Sure, sure.
And so the sales numbers were very low because that's what happens when a book is not marketed. And now I had kind of this black mark to my name and nobody wanted my books. And so I had several books go out in New York and I just could not drum up the creative energy to write another book to die in New York. And so I had to do something else.
Yeah.
And so I started indie publishing because it was like, I can see a future here. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't even about there not being a future in New York. It was about making myself believe in it again.
Yeah.
And so I did that for a while for that reason. And so, we would still send out book one of a series in New York, but I wouldn't just take a no as like a no forever anymore. I would take it and be like, okay, they don't want it. I'd give it a year, send it around. If it got rejected everywhere, then I'd do it myself.
Okay. So if it got published by a publisher, great. And if it didn't, then you're going to be doing the indie publishing.
Yep, just so that I could move forward and not feel like I was accruing dead manuscripts.
And Jance, what is... like that. What does indie publishing look like for you? I assume it's just a lot more work on your end.
You know, it's a lot of work to traditionally publish too.
Yeah.
And so I actually find it's about the same amount of work because like I said, the publisher doesn't necessarily market you. They might, but really you have to do a lot of your own marketing. And so the things that are a little easier with a publisher is that they'll do the layout for you. They will pay for the editing, those things. But there's still
you can
a lot
pay
of
for the layout too. You can pay for somebody to do your layout, to do your cover. Yeah, as long as you're willing to pay for it and you believe in your work that that money will come back to you.
Yeah. But yeah, I find they're actually about the same amount of work and about the same amount of difficult. And so I always tell people, you know, people say like, should I do indie? Should I do traditional? And I always say, what do you want? What do you want to do?
Yeah.
Like you might as well do what you want because they're both hard and they're both a lot of work.
Yeah. One thing I love about what you're saying though, is like one, we started with the idea that you wrote because it's fun. Right. And you love the idea of finishing a book. And then as you go through your career, you're finding ways mm-hmm. to keep
fun
that
alive.
Well, that fun or that success, because it's an industry where there's lots of doors that get closed
all the time.
And it's really important to find reasons why you like to do it mm-hmm. and ways to succeed with what you're doing. Yeah. So it's really cool that you found these ways.
And did you have a time after college where you had to get a job that wasn't writing, or has this been your career
from
the get-go?
It's been my career, but it hasn't always made money, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So my husband paints gaming miniatures. That's what he does for a living.
Nice.
And so we graduated
from... What a
from
duo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you guys are just rolling in the dough.
Oh, yeah. So when we were in college, I was teaching freshman writing as a grad instructor. And so I paid the bills while he was starting his business. And then his business paid our bills for a bunch of years while I was not making money writing. Yeah. So I didn't have another career, but I was just working for free, right? And then eventually my career started doing better and was taking up paying more of the bills. So
nice. Yeah. And then what about paying for like covers and that kind of stuff? What was that like when you're doing the indie stuff?
For the indie stuff. So when I first indie published, I did not have money to pay for covers, but I had a friend who was a graphic designer who was excited to do them for me, and so I paid her royalties. Okay. So she got a cut of the books, and I did the same thing with editing on my first few. Later on, I did start paying a cover designer for like our rom-com series. We paid a cover designer. And then I also learned how to do my own, so I've done some of my own. I always say like you have three options, right? You can learn to be a professional, you can pay a professional, or you can look unprofessional, right? These are your three choices.
Right.
And so I did a little bit of a mix of the pay a professional and then become a professional, learning how to do it myself. So.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So talk about your biggest success. What's been kind of your number one book? When did that come out, and just how that kind of changed the path of your career?
I mean, my biggest success is definitely my collaborations with Brandon Sanderson. Mm-hmm.
Well, spoiler, that is the whole topic of our next episode.
You know what?
Well, you know what? We're at that point.
Awesome.
Oh.
Right now.
Leave till the next
one. I think we are. I think that was our warning. So if
good
you want to hear,
Nancy.
If you want to hear in, and for you, listeners, that's going to be a month away, but it is going to be worth the wait for sure. So as we wrap things up real quick, let's just talk about what the three of you guys have coming up that you guys want to promote and talk about. Jancy, do you have anything that's coming out soon that we should be aware of?
Yes. So in September, I have Blightfall coming out, which is my first book in the Riftwake trilogy.
Yeah, I'm excited.
It's a follow-up to the Skyward series. So
very cool.
Excited about that.
Very cool. And that comes out when?
September 1st.
September 1st.
Yep.
And if people wanted to follow you, where do they follow you?
And I'm on Instagram and I'm on TikTok. Those are the best places.
Very good. She puts out a lot of good content.
Yeah.
So it's really fun to follow Jancy.
Thank you.
Very, very cool. Shelley, what do you have coming up?
I don't have things coming up.
You what? You gave
yes.
up?
I did all my things. And
aren't you gone. Aren't you judging any contests or anything?
We have another middle grade book coming out, and we don't have a date on
that.
We
don't have a date.
So it's probably
next
year. That's
the tricky part. Yeah, and it's all secret-y still.
Yeah, I remember last time we talked, you guys were saying that it was all kind of top secret, and still is.
Yeah, we're about to sign the contract, but we're actually turning in the book like in a month.
Wait a second.
What is this out of order?
It's out of order.
It's a little. We did a little agent change and stuff in between.
Oh, yeah. Was your previous agent not letting you write what you wanted to write?
It was Jancy's agent.
Okay.
No, totally different story. Our agent just got another job in publishing and decided not to be an agent anymore. And
okay.
So.
That happens more than you would think. People get orphaned.
That's fair.
Yep.
So you guys were orphaned for a little bit. How long were you guys in between agents?
No, we turned it around like in a month.
Yeah.
Nice.
So are we doing an episode on that? Because I want to hear this story.
Nope. Jancy,
you are the guest.
Prime time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap that up. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Mulling It Over, this time without Brandon Mull.